ego mind.
The ego mind, yes. How you react to things, just a whole shell of things. And it was being restructured of what were my goals now. Meeting Baba presented a new challenge to me. What were my goals and what were my values now in the light of meeting Baba? How could I live a life more to what Baba would want me to live? How could I fit that in with my longing for Baba? All these things were just adding up in a different way. And my sister found the same thing was happening to her. And she was, her words for it are that Baba was planting the seed through which a new structure would grow, through which he could function with us in our lives. So I really believe that's what was happening. And it was hard work, really hard work. I thought I was doing it all myself. Then after the day was over, the interviews were over, all those who were there were called into Baba's room. We were sitting on the floor, and Baba was having some fun with us and relaxing and talking to this one and that one. And he was telling some stories. And all of a sudden, he looked at me, and he put his fingers together in a circle, just like that. And his eyes brightened up, like, I'm pleased with what went on up there. And then all of a sudden, oh, Baba was doing it all the time. And that was when I became aware and convinced of how carefully Baba maneuvers within us and how much he knows the ins and outs of our entire being, and how that he cares so much to help us with all of that nitty-gritty, to work it out with us. And so for me, Baba is my psychologist. He's my analyst as well. In fact, we used to talk about it because we saw how he was treating other people. And we were saying, well, he's the best psychologist anybody could have. And that's exactly what he was doing. For all of my life and for any problems that had ever come up for me, I always take them to Baba, because that's part of my spiritual growth and unravelment and everything, and it's my chance to come closer to him through the means that he uses, the troubles, the confusions, the conflicts in life. He works through all of that with us so that we find we have to rely on him to help us through it. And, you know, we're really not such a big deal. We really can't get through it all by ourselves. And so he's the one who really directs the show. And, you know, once in a while we see that he is, and we acknowledge that he is. And the more we see that, the more we're willing to accept it and say, yes, he really is all the time working with us. And he's never absent from us. We are the ones who are absent from him. So the lessons were being learned and are still being learned. And then another time, still at Mrs. Deuce's apartment, Baba came out into the main waiting room, and all the workers were there and some other people were there. And Baba was saying this and that. I don't remember what he was saying. And I was thinking, oh, this is such a wonderful opportunity to just love Baba and to feel his love and to give him love. And I was thinking, but I'm not loving Baba. I'm adoring Baba. And it's the first time I ever adored anybody. I just sat there adoring Baba. That's a new one. And all of a sudden, Baba looks up and he says, I am adorable. Nothing escapes him. And so, I mean, he reassures us over and over. We're little children. We really need that reassurance of his knowledge of where we are and what we're doing and what we're thinking and how we're feeling. Also, another time, another reassurance of how we were feeling was at the Wilmington Airport when Baba had us gathered around, and he was leaving the United States in 1958. And he was just looking from one to another, and he wouldn't let us cry. You know, we'd all be very willing to break down and say, "Oh, no, leave." And he would smile, and he was giving us his supportive love. And in the face of that, you can't cry. He was looking at us in such a way as to evoke our courage and bravery, not to break down and cry, and to sustain his love within. And to sustain us and to take his love within and to sustain us for the intervening years and for all times, just pouring it in to make it stay with us. So why waste your time crying about it, and just take it all in and feel his love and keep it forever? And so that's what we were doing, and I was feeling his love so much. And then he went over some other part, a little distance from me, was doing something else and talking to people. And I couldn't stop looking at him. In fact, I was staring at him. My eyes were glued on him. And all of a sudden, he just stopped from what he was doing and he looked up at me. And he goes, and acknowledged my love and his love. In fact, way back in Mrs. Deuce's apartment again, one time he said, "Always be alert to my love and my love glances, because you never know when I might just shoot a glance at you out of the corner of my eye and it'll be full of love." So that made us always very alert to his love glances. And he did give us those at the oddest moments all the time. Everybody experienced those, I'm sure. It's little things. There was a time in 1956 when we were with Baba at Myrtle Beach Center. There were quite a number of us there, and we saw Baba every day. For a few days. It was in 56. There was a public time. The public was invited to see Baba, and we each saw Baba from time to time at the center. At the public day at the barn, people were coming in and coming out through the back porch, and my mother was on the back porch, and my sister and I kind of stood there too, because we always wanted to be, if we ever had the chance, to be where we could look in on Baba and just have a glimpse of him, because his love radiance was always coming out and we wanted to absorb more and more. And even at the times in New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles, wherever he was giving interviews and we happened to be around, it could be even on the fringe of it, we would just absorb Baba's love all the time. And so that's what we were doing on the porch there. And there was one day when the black people were received, and Baba stood for the black people, and which was different from his usual greeting. The others were just came in and came up to Baba, and Baba remained seated. So I felt that was significant. And also that was the time when he was in the barn, when he said, "Love, give everything to me," in 56. And there were 50 of us who traveled with Baba. We were with Baba at the barn and at the center for a few days, and then we came up to Washington, D.C., and we were in a bus, and Baba went visiting somewhere else, and the rest of us were sent around Arlington Cemetery in a bus. I never could figure that out. Then I guess we stayed here a day or something like that, and then we took off across the country to Los Angeles and then on to San Francisco.
Excuse me, did you talked about meeting Baba in Mrs. Deuce's apartment? That was in 52?
That was in 52. So we met Baba in May 52. Then he had the automobile accident in Prague, Oklahoma in July or June, forget the date, came back, and he had scheduled interviews in New York in the middle of July.
I was wondering if you could say something about whether you had any thoughts about Baba's accident and whether the enormity of that occurred to you at the time, or whether you, how Baba looked, other than the fact that he cast on. I mean,
okay,
such an incredible event.
Yes, it was an incredible event, but I wasn't able to be very conscious of what it meant or how it felt or very much about it at all. I just wasn't there. My conscious mind couldn't register it at all. Erich asked me a similar question, and the answer seemed to be that I found Baba adorable, that he was more loving, more appealing, and you felt more loving toward him. I think it registers on one in a way that one can't be conscious. I couldn't grasp the magnitude of Baba's suffering at that time at all.
How old were you?
I was 18. It's not that I wasn't sympathetic for somebody in pain, but I just didn't grasp it. Sometime later in my life, I did have the chance to be more conscious of his suffering. In my own life, I had a dream. I've had a number of dreams of Baba. One of them was that Baba, I was kneeling before Baba, and he put his left leg on my shoulder, and the weight of it was so heavy, and he was showing me the weight of his suffering because it was his left leg that was broken. So that preceded, only by maybe a month or two, that dream preceded my ski accident in which I broke my leg, my left leg. And I felt that Baba was giving me a very real experience of what it is to suffer a bit. Only my suffering was limited to me and not universal. And my brother also cracked his kneecap the month before I had my accident, both skiing accidents. We both felt that Baba was giving us a chance to have some concept of his suffering. And we felt it was a blessing to have that chance to suffer in that way. It's not so much what happens to you is how you take it. And that's how we took it. And how we live through that. But in my personal life also, being very close to Jesus in my younger years, I was always very concerned about Jesus' crucifixion and how Jesus felt in his suffering. And I felt that that was a mystery to me, and that it was beyond me to grasp the significance of his suffering. And especially on Good Fridays, I would try to understand it, try to be more conscious of this. All through my years, this is something that was going on. It was another one of my secrets, which I never told anyone. But Baba knew about it, that I was concerned about the suffering of the avatar and didn't know how to understand it. And I think that it is impossible, really, to understand it. In 1958, Baba said of the Sahavas at Myrtle Beach that we were all blessed to be with him, because by being with him, we were sharing in his universal suffering. And he said, "I have come to suffer untold agony so that you would come to know that you are bliss itself." I feel that Baba's suffering is just, well, extremely important. One day in 1958, I was in Baba's house at Myrtle Beach. I was one of three who were asked to come early and dust and tidy up the house. And it was Billy, Eaton, and Ella, and I, and we would scurry around. We'd come early, and Baba would be in the house, and several of the Mandali would be in the house, and we'd run the sweeper, dust, and straighten things up, and then we would go into Baba's bedroom, and somehow Baba would come into the living room when we went into the bedroom. And one morning, I found a little amber plastic, was really tiny, Indian bracelet by the chair where Baba sat in the living room. So I picked it up, and I was holding it. And then while I was leaving the living room to go to the bedroom, Baba was entering the living room. And I saw Baba suffering on his face. He never looked at me, but I saw his suffering, and I was, really saw it. And it is staggering. We just can't know his suffering. So I went on into, actually I went into the room where the two beds are. And then here I was still holding this bracelet, and I was wondering what to do with it. And I certainly didn't want to go trouble Baba after seeing that expression on his face. And Adi came along, and I said, "Look, I found this. What should I do with it?" He took it, and he went out to Baba, and he brought it back, and he said, "Keep it." He said, "Keep it." So I have that bracelet. And so after we finished our duties, cleaning the Baba's room and making the bed together, which was a very wonderful activity and privilege, the three of us would take turns on one on each side one day, and then the next time we'd do it all together. We would always hurry up with our work so we could go back out to the living room and sit at Baba's feet until it was time for him to leave. And then when he would leave, he would go out the front door, and we'd go out through the kitchen out the back, and he'd go into the car, and we'd all wave to him while he'd go to the main center into the barn. And then we'd scurry and get ourselves over to the barn. Well, this morning I was still holding that bracelet when I went to sit down. And Baba was talking about Jesus' suffering. And somehow there were times when Baba would be talking about a specific topic or something, and you knew it would be meant just for you, even though he was saying it to others. And he wouldn't even look at you. And when he was talking about Jesus' suffering, I felt the impact of understanding Jesus' suffering a little bit more. He said, "Jesus suffered the way a man suffers. He didn't relieve himself of that suffering with his bliss. He suffered like a man does." And the words sound, just now saying, I don't know how to convey that. Those words conveyed volumes to me. I was stunned. And holding that bracelet is now always a reminder of that incident.
Beatrice, were you thinking about Jesus at that time?
No, I wasn't. Not at all. And it also conveyed to me that Baba knew that I had wanted to understand Jesus' suffering. All at once, Baba conveys those things to you, and no one else in the room suspects what's going on. I'm still trying to understand Baba's suffering. I think it's really quite beyond us. And one of the things also that impressed me about Baba's suffering was how he was being carried in the chair. He was being carried in the chair in 1958 because he couldn't walk because of the second accident. And obviously he was in continuous pain. And here we were, all we could think about was his love. And one day, this spring, I was looking at a picture of Baba being carried in the chair. And these words came to me about that. How patient and enduring Baba was, especially while being carried about in the chair. To have allowed his body to be so incapacitated as to be dependent on others to move about, because he used to walk so swiftly. That was humiliating for a God man to be put in that position, to allow himself to be like that. When he walked, he moved so swiftly and so gracefully, as though he were floating along, and no one could catch up to him. And yet he confined himself to this chair. And having to be carried about in the chair, it gave the opportunity to others to be near him and to give service to him. And when we walked alongside of Baba while he was being carried, we were not thinking about how he was suffering, enduring patiently. Yet he was giving us a demonstration of how to be cheerful and giving throughout all that he faced and endured. We were thinking of him. All eyes were upon him. Even as we walked along, we sought his love glance and his smile, and we lived in the warmth of his love, in the brilliance of his being. The clouds of our own self and selfishness were evaporating by his blazing sun. Yet we couldn't know it then because we were moving in the spirit of companionship with him. Come what may, not knowing what would happen from moment to moment, we were caught in this magic moment of being with him and being a part of his being. And he was our beloved, and that's all that we cared about. We were happy, very happy. Our most cherished desire was being fulfilled. All other desires didn't even come into view while moving along with Baba. We were secure and safe in his hands. We ventured into the realms of the unknown, undaunted, and with courage we dared to come close to our beloved, because there was nothing else to lose except anything that stood to keep us separate from him. Our physical closeness and efforts to be close to him reflected our inner determination to be close to him inwardly. And today we strive to be close to him in much the same way, with that courage and that daring, and knowing that we are always secure in his love. So those were the thoughts that Baba gave me this year on reflecting back on what happened then. Because then I couldn't have had those thoughts. It's just part of the seasoning, I guess. Are there any? I'll pause now for any question before I tell any more. Okay.
You mentioned that the problem with sending people glances or love glances in totally unexpected moments. Can you give an example of that?
Yes, out of the blue. Most of the times out of the blue. I was on the stairway in Mrs. Deuce's apartment and Baba was going into the main room and he just turned around and shot up a glance like that. Then another time was on the airplane between Los Angeles and San Francisco. I was still not used to flying by air. And I wanted the window seat, and my sister had the window seat, and I thought, oh, shucks, I can't even look out the window. Now what am I going to do? And I thought, well, of course, the obvious, think about Baba and love Baba. After all, he's up there on the same plane with us. I mean, why can't you love Baba? Well, I can't even manufacture any love for Baba. I just am dry. I don't have any love for him. I mean, it's not as though I don't love him, but I couldn't feel any love for him, to him. You know what I mean? I wanted to be absorbed in his love, and I couldn't. You know, I couldn't just say, okay, Baba, I'm going to love you now. It didn't work. I was just bone dry. And I said, okay. And my mother, just then, who was sitting behind me, said, would you go up and get the camera from my father, who was sitting in the aisle, in the row in front of Baba? I said, okay. And I went up and past Baba's, where he had the window seat. And I went up and got the camera from my father. And I premeditated that I was going to look at Baba when I came back. So I got the camera and I looked at Bob and he was ready for me. He was like that and he just gave me this wide-eyed grin and he just more than filled me up. I was ecstatic. I floated back to my chair and didn't have to do a thing but swim in his love, float in his love. I was just on cloud nine all the way to San Francisco. He fulfills your wishes, especially if they're love wishes. He gives you your heart's desire, too, if your heart's in the right place. let's see, what is my watch right?
Yeah, still got a few more minutes.
I have a question. Do you ever feel those glances now, but through other people? I mean, do you ever feel like he's
yes.
talking to you through other people?
Definitely.
I mean, and does he shoot glances? I mean, what?
Yes.
How do you know? I mean, what happens?
Well, it's at the oddest moments and the oddest times. Of course, the most obvious times are when you're in India and Eric says something and you go, and you become speechless and you think, oh, what a tummy I am. I can't even carry on a conversation with Eric because all of a sudden I'm so struck with Baba's love. It's things like that. Or it's very odd moments that you become struck with Baba's love. Through the mandalay in particular, but in one's life, in one's family life, and even sometimes with strangers, you become conscious of Baba's presence or you feel him in some ways. Before leaving for India this summer, there was all this to do about the airline hijackings and our imminent trip coming up and my parents being very concerned and all of that, I felt perfectly comfortable about it, and so did my daughter. We were going scheduled to go through Egypt and Kuwait, and every time I said to myself, well, how do I feel about this? I was sitting at the kitchen table one time, and all of a sudden I felt Baba's presence all around me very strongly. And I took it to mean that Baba said, the trip will be fine, not to worry about it. And then I was also sitting in the dining room chair, still thinking about it. And it was like I heard Baba say, I want you to come. Because there were moments when I was thinking, well, should I really go? And he gives you these confirmations. But in the end, I wound up changing my flight to another airline because of family pressure not to go through Egypt and Kuwait. And then my own mind was working again, thinking, well, how do you know this is safe? And we were my daughter and I were driving the trip up to Albuquerque to 250 miles. She was driving and I was looking out at the scenery, and this thought occurred to me again, how do we know this is safe? And just then I kind of looked over the highway, and in New Mexico you don't have crowded highways. You don't have trucks passing back and forth. You see a car maybe every 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So the timing is everything. I'm thinking this thought. I look out, and coming from the opposite direction is this big truck. And across the side of it in big red letters, Safeway. This connects. It's Baba's way of reassuring you. But my mind doesn't stop there. And he has to really spell it out to me. And it was maybe another 100 miles away again, and I fell into the same way of thinking again, the same thought, you know, well, that was really quite a coincidence. And I started thinking the same, well, I really wonder if it's safe. And I wasn't thinking another thing. And way over there was another Safeway truck. Those are the only trucks I had seen in the whole trip. It's just uncanny. I don't know how to explain it. But Baba does a lot of that with me in my life. Because I require a lot of having it spelled out. And he does it my way most of the time. He babies me along in that sense. Anything else?
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Here to part two tomorrow night.
Okay, Jay Pamba. Jay Baba, thank you again for bringing me here for the pleasure of sharing Baba's love with you. Again. When we were with Baba, he said, I am the ocean, and it's up to you to draw as much from the ocean as you can. And that's what it's all about. So that's what we were doing when we were with Baba. On the shores of the infinite ocean, swimming in his love. Going deeper and deeper into his love. Baba said to the Shaw family. Let me find the direct quote here, right on top. In 1958, he said, "When devotion is at its zenith, then you really begin to love. Emotion is one thing, love is another. Honesty is work for me. Serve others, let it be honest. Think of me always. I am the sun. Very few burn completely in my love." So that's what we began doing, more or less consciously, very happily, very joyously. He was like, we were like his children, especially in 1952 at Myrtle Beach. Well, actually, I was in my late teens, so I felt like a child, because there were very few people there my age. There were some younger, and most of them a lot older. So it was pretty easy for me also to feel like a child, especially a child in Baba's love. And in a way, Baba was, he felt more like our father in the way he treated us with the kind of love he gave us. In one sense, it was overpowering, and in another sense, it was like the father who was absolutely delighted in his precious child. And we were all his children in his love. And that kind of delight in his love for us brought out the best in us, in our endeavors to love him back and to increase our capacity to love him. And he would pat this one and that one and smile at this one and that one. And those were just those small encouragements that meant so much to us, to be brave, to come closer and closer into the ocean of his love. We literally went into the ocean with Baba in 1958. I was at Baba's house one morning, and it was the day before the last day. I was with Billy Eaton and Ella Winterfeld as one of three who were asked to clean up around Baba's house first thing in the morning, before we all went to the barn for the rest of the day. And this particular morning, as we finished our work and sat in front of Baba while he was discussing one thing or another with the Mandalay and talking about things to come, he said, "Tomorrow I might go to the beach, or I might do this." And he said, "It's very important to be physically close to me, as close as possible." And I thought, that's for me. And I made up my mind I was going to, even if I had to elbow my way around, I was going to be very close to Baba tomorrow, especially since it was the last day. And sure enough, we did go to the beach. And in anticipation of that, I wore a sundress with a little white cotton bolero. And when we got to the beach, I took off my shoes and off with a bolero. I was prepared right away. And Baba was carried onto the beach in the chair. And we were all following him closely. And we walked right through one of these puddles on the beach. And we went... we started all of a sudden heading right for the ocean. And I was shoulder to shoulder to Baba as he was being carried in. And we headed down the bank of the beach and right straight into the surf, very, very rapidly. And without a thought, absolutely no thought at all, it simply didn't matter to me what we were doing. that I mean, it was a surprise. Here we are walking into the ocean, and there wasn't any indication of, well, how far do we go? I mean, we were going more than tiptoeing, and there was a rush of excitement, and just a glorious feeling of doing this all en masse with Baba, rushing into the ocean. And before you know it, we were up to our knees in the water. And it didn't seem to matter to me what was happening. All I cared about is that I was right next to Baba in the water. And I looked over there, Erich was up to his knees, most of the people with the shoes on and everything. And Baba had them stop, and he was satisfied because it was deep enough so that his feet could rest in the water. And he could dip his feet in the water. So I don't know what significance that meant in Baba's terms, but for us it was wonderful to share in that beautiful moment of rushing into the ocean with the ocean, the divine ocean, and taste that. And so then as soon as that happened, turn right around and up onto the higher ground, onto the beach with Baba in the chair. And they set Baba down with a chair onto the beach. And I was still at his shoulder, and all of a sudden I realized, well, his feet are wet, and who's got a towel? And I had my little cotton bolero, and I thought, oh, I'd like to get down there and dry his feet. And so I couldn't. Someone else was there, and so I just gently dropped that bolero down toward his feet, and someone else dried his feet with it, and then the bolero was passed back up to me. And I think also someone else offered a sweater and dried his feet with it. I think Baba's just set me up for that, to give me a little gift. And I was so thrilled at having this handed back to me and realizing the significance of it. I held it like that, and I was... And all of a sudden, he was being lifted up in the chair and off and running again, and I was still here. And I, because of that, I missed my place at his side. And they were off, way off there so fast. And then they put his chair down, and I quickly caught up. And that was the time when Baba allowed women to lift him up in the chair. And that was hilarious.
I just heard the story at the Baba Center from one of the men who'd been carrying the chair.
Oh, yes, they did it so perfectly, and they did it like this, and it really literally looked like he would topple over any minute. And because everybody wanted to get their hand on, and he didn't seem to be very aware of the balance of the situation. And of course, Baba was very patient. And needless to say, we didn't go very far, more than a couple of feet. And I suppose that had its significance too, giving women the chance to participate in something like that. And then he was set down again, and the regulars took over in the balancing act. So that was a delightful morning with Baba on the beach. In 1956, we spent another time with Baba on the beach. And that was the time when Baba sat down. I wasn't right there at the moment that it was being done. But Baba sat down and looked like he was playing in the sand. But what he was doing was making a shape of a face. And then he said that was the face of the first man. I think there's a picture of it somewhere. But what we were all supposed to be doing was to scour the beach and find the best seashells so that the best ones could be taken back to Mara and Mani and the other ladies, so they'd have lovely souvenirs of the beach at Myrtle Beach. And that's what we were doing. Were you? No. Okay, we were walking around, and I was careful not to walk too far away from Baba And it seemed like there weren't very many good shells, or I didn't see very good shells. And I didn't, in desperation, I didn't want to be left without any shell to present. And so, while I didn't pick up the most common, at least I picked up a somewhat more unusual one. And it wasn't a terrific shell, but it was a very round, circular shell that opened up like that. Not an ordinary clam, I don't think, but it was more pretty than that. Anyway, that was the best I could do. And so I dared approach Baba with it, and we were supposed to present them to Baba for him to take. And so I very sheepishly offered it to him, like, you know.